Titanic und kein Ende. Hallo, ich bin Chris, Reisefotograf und Podcaster. Schön, dass du heute wieder Zeit gefunden hast, um mit uns nach Irland zu kommen, auf die grüne Insel. Heute geht es einmal wieder um eines meiner Lieblingsthemen, um die Titanic. Die Titanic wurde ja in Irland gebaut und bei ihrer Jungfernfahrt waren auch sehr viele Iren mit an Bord, die beim Untergang ihr Leben verloren haben. Und so sind wir immer wieder unterwegs und besuchen Orte, die mit dem Schiff oder auch mit den Passagieren in Verbindung stehen. Heute sind wir in Aderguli. Da gibt es ein Denkmal, sehr schön pittoresk im Hintergrund mit einem Berg. Ganz zufällig sind wir da in eine Führung gestolpert, in eine Führung der Aderguli Titanic Society. Die Aderguli Titanic Society hat es sich auf die Fahnen geschrieben, eben das Andenken der Passagiere aus der Gegend zu bewahren. Und zufällig, als wir dort waren und ich fotografiert habe, eben auch ein sehr schönes Fotomotiv, kam gerade der Guide Thomas Gibbons vorbei mit zwei Engländern, die gerne eine Führung bekommen haben. Und was er uns so alles erzählt hat, das erfahrt ihr in dieser Episode.
I looked around the Titanic part now first, because we know what happened after the terrible famine in Ireland. It's in the mid 19th century, the terrible famine. So there was that huge emigration afterwards. The population decreased from I don't know how many million down to 3 or 4 million, 5 million at most. Now, areas like this were dotted with little cottages, small holdings. But they just weren't economical and that. So people emigrated. And then, around the turn of the century, around 1900 and so on, there was huge emigration to America. And then in 1912, this thing about this great ship that was being built in Belfast, the Titanic. And tickets were being sold around the place for the Titanic. And a huge number of people from the area decided they were going to America. Now, there was a reason why so many girls from here went. One of the people who was actually lost in the Titanic had been in America for a number of years. And we'll see more about her in a few minutes. And she had been quite successful in America. She had a boarding house in Chicago. She employed quite a number of young girls in that. She also had another little industry whereby she provided domestic labour for a lot of families. So it was very much in her interest to get as many girls as possible to go. Now, it has been said that she lent them the fare, or lent a number of them the fare, which is quite possible. And of course, they'd pay back by installments, which of course
slave labour nearly.
That never happened anyway. Yeah. But anyway, 14 people from this immediate area here were on the Titanic. In fact, just a few hundred yards back here, there's a little village called Carrigskeen. And three houses side by side, from those three houses, 5 people were lost.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Three boats, Fleming and a Manga. But they went downwind. As I said, 11 of them were lost. Three survived. And of course, they were all remembered, you know, naturally by their own families. They had prayers every year for them, probably had an anniversary mass or something every year. But then, round 14 or 15 or 16 years ago, a few of us got together. In fact, there was our local doctor here, Paul Nolan. And I met him one night and says, "No, Toss, I was out on a sick call last night. I was over to Mrs. Canavan over the road here. And she told me that her aunt was on the Titanic." Of course, he was very surprised to hear that, because, like myself, he was blowing into the area. So, he says, were there many other people around in the Titanic, or was there anybody else? He says, oh, there were an awful lot of people from this area on the Titanic, which I just can't remember them now. So he came back and he was telling me that the next night. And a few got together and we said, well, we should inquire and see exactly who was on the Titanic. So we made our few inquiries and we discovered that there were 14 local people. So I said, they were all remembered by their own families, all remembered individually, but we felt that they should be remembered by the community. That should be a community organisation to remember them. So we formed the Titanic Society. Yeah. Like we made all our inquiries, discovered who they were and all that. So we formed the Titanic Society. And then, after one or two meetings, we says, well, we should have something more concrete than that. We should have a Titanic Memorial Park or something. So we worked on that for a while, and we got this bit of ground here from the man in the house in here, who is our local parish priest.
Okay.
So he donated this bit of ground here, and we've formed the Titanic Park.
Yeah, very good.
Now, we spent quite a while thinking about it, talking about it, planning and all this, and we more or less planned it out, and the great plan we made was that everything we would build here would be built from stones, either from the homes or from round the homes of the 14 people.
Yeah.
Now, those things included that wall over there, the north wall, and the west wall, and everything else was just built. So every stone came either from the homes or from round the homes of the 14 people. So they can all feel quite at home here. Now, as well as that, we have 14 trees planted round, one in memory of each of them. Now, everything which was done here, all the work, was done on a voluntary basis, always voluntary labour. So before the week before we had our official opening, we had a cultural week. And the cultural week, quite a group gathered. We gathered here on one morning, one Sunday morning, up outside the church, with our four horses and traps and that. And they all went off. 14 people went off on the traps or the sidecars up to the railway station in Castlebar.
Okay.
Which is exactly what happened.
Oh, okay. Then leaving.
In 1912, the 100 years earlier.
Yeah.
Now, the official opening of the culture week was done by a local woman.
Yeah.
A woman who lived locally here. A woman called Mary Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
A former president. Okay. Now, when Mary Robinson, she was here in the park, and when she became president, she put a light in her residence in Dublin, in North and Lutheran, which comes on continuously.
Okay.
A light which is a symbol of welcome back for returning immigrants.
Yeah.
So she unveiled a light up on that little window up there. We cannot see it now in daylight, but it's on day and night, a symbol of welcome back for returning immigrants.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, everything was done with stones
from
round the homes. But then, we see up here in the corner, some little round stones.
Okay.
Of course, they didn't come from the buildings, but they have a significance as well, as 18 of the 32 counties of Ireland touched the sea.
Okay.
So went round to each of the 18 counties, picked up a few beach stones, and we have them there as well, as a symbol of welcome back for returning immigrants. Then, the following week, we had the official opening of the park here, which was done by another local person, a young chap called Indy Kenny.
Yeah.
He lives up the road here a few miles.
Yeah.
There was our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister. So with the former President and our Taoiseach opened it. Now every year since, we remembered the people on the Titanic. And how we remembered them is that on the ship was sinking, we'd say, the 14th, 15th of April. In fact, it was sinking from 20 past two or till 2:45 in the morning.
Okay.
So on the evening of the 14th of April each year, we assemble here at 8 o'clock in the evening. So if we talk about the Titanic, some prayers, usually we have mass in the corner up there. We erect a temporary altar up there, have our mass up there at 8 o'clock. Have a few prayers and that, and then we disband. But we reassemble again at 2 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning?
Imagine 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, yeah. But we reassemble up at the church.
I thought you only say the pub. But no.
Up at the church at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we have the same procedure every year nearly. We start off with a candlelight procession round the church, led by the relatives of the 14. Each of the relatives carrying their torch round the church. Again, a few prayers, a little talk and that. And then we end up with our bell ringing ceremony, which starts at exactly 20 past two. Now, as I said, the ship was sinking from 20 past until 2:45, 25 minutes. So 11 local people are lost. So the relatives of the 11 who are lost, each ring the bell, have a toll for two sad, slow minutes. That's 22 minutes. And then, 3 minutes left, the relatives of the three who survived, three happy, joyous minutes. And we do that every year. And then disband. Now, we didn't do it last year, the year before, naturally, on account of COVID. But we did it back again this year. And with the biggest crowd thing we had in the year, we had a huge ceremony. It was very, very, very successful. So now we'll just sort of look around the house.
I mean, you were saying about the population. I read that the population of Ireland before the famine was 8 million, and it was the same as England and Wales.
Yes.
And it's never got back to that since, is it?
No, it's up near 5.
5 now,
well, between north and south now, it's around 5.
So Ireland's the only Western European country where the population is lower than it was in 1840.
But it's growing quickly, though.
No, it is not.
No, goes here in the background, we have Nathan Mountain, which, believe it or not, is Ireland's biggest mountain. It is also Ireland's tallest mountain, but not Ireland's highest mountain.
Is it not?
Not even Mayo's highest mountain. But it is the highest mountain, the highest standalone mountain, at 2,688 feet.
There isn't much vegetation on it, is it? It's very stony, isn't it?
It is just very, very stony. Now, lots and lots of people climb it, thousands of people climb it. But you know how it got its name? We call it Nathan. And I'm sure you heard the title of an ancient people who were in Ireland called the Fiera, or Fionn MacCool. You heard of Fionn MacCool, the great warrior. And the followers of Fionn were called the Fiona, Fionn's followers. And they spent a lot of their time in this area. In fact, just up the road here, about a half mile, there's a big well. And the town there is called Tubber na Bhfion, the well of the Fiona. And one day it said that Fionn decided to climb the mountain. So he climbed the mountain, beautiful sunny day apparently, and looked round and saw the magnificent scenery. And he said, "This is paradise. Fionn's paradise. Nia Fionn."
Okay.
So I tell people, if you climb the mountain, you can always say you're in heaven. So I'll just take a walk around the park.
It's a lovely spot indeed.
So what will you do with this?
We do a podcast series. That's really good.
It's just amazing that you're out here in the sort of sticks in Ireland, and there's this wonderful story about the Titanic, which is a sort of international story, isn't it, really? Mm. What happened in a small community.
Here in the centre now we have four bronze figures.
Yeah.
Actually, they were made locally as well.
Okay,
there's a place, man over in Swinford, who makes, does that kind of work. So what it did was, got four local people, three girls and a boy, who posed from, took the photograph. They were dressed in 1912 gear and that. So he took the photographs and made the bronze figures then. But as I said, the three, always three girls and one man. That's in as close a proportion we could go to the 11 women and three lads who are on from the area. Now, we always show one of them, one girl wearing a hat. Because there are a few stories about that. As I know the family well. But she told the story that the week before they left, her mother sent her down to Crossblinder down here, a few miles down the road, to buy her new gear for going to America and to buy her new hat and that. So she told the story that she was walking up from Crossblinder up to Laherlon, met a few of her friends and they were walking up. She says, when a man tapped her on the shoulder, there's going to be terrible tragedy, but don't worry, you'll be all right. And she says, who is that man? And the girl says, what man? We didn't see any man. She said, the man who spoke to me. Nobody there. Now, there was a similar story told by an English woman who was on the Titanic as the ship was sinking. And as they were going toward the lifeboats and that a strange man tapped her on the shoulder and said, don't worry, it's going to be an awful tragedy, but you'll be safe. Now, whether there was any connection between the two things or not, we don't know. But the girls never saw any man, but she's always shown wearing the hat. Oh, yes, she told another story, which I know can't be true. But she told the story. Now, she was one of the survivors. And she told the story that when she was getting on the lifeboat, she remembered that she'd come without her hat. And how her mother had told her, never go out and piss without being well-dressed without wearing your hat. And that she got off the lifeboat and went back down to steerage class and got her hat and came up. Now, that is completely out. That would be impossible. Yeah. That could not have happened.
No. And probably, I mean, the history of the Titanic was third class passengers, the cheapest, were locked in the ferry.
They were locked in an area called steerage class. And you know how it got the name steerage class? Well, that got the name from the American word steers for cattle. American word for cattle, steers.
Yeah.
And the ships on the Mississippi, they carried passengers on the upper deck and cattle on the lower deck.
Yeah.
So the lower deck was called the steerage class. But now steerage class on the Titanic, there was nothing wrong with it.
No.
In fact, it was luxury like this 14 would never have seen before. It was the equivalent, believe, of a four-star hotel today. Those people coming from the little thatched cottages here would never have seen luxury like that, except possibly two of them. Two of them, had been in America previously. And they might have. Won't say they did, but they might have. But the awful thing about steerage class, or steerage on the Titanic, that was completely isolated from the rest of the ship. The passengers on steerage were not allowed to mix with the passengers in the rest of the ship. They weren't allowed out of steerage. So then you might ask, well, how did any of them escape? Because even on the night the ship sank, the doors of steerage were still kept locked. But thankfully we know. I know. And I'm sure the people from here know. they said there were 14 Lapland people. Mm. 11 girls and 3 fellas. And the 3 fellas naturally didn't want to be hanging around with the 11 girls, same 11 girls all day long, every day. So they spent the first 2 or 3 days on the Titanic there with the girls. But then they began to ramble around here and there and every place. Now, I know their families. And knowing their families, I can imagine exactly what was going through their minds. Especially one of them, Pat Canavan, knowing what his nephews and grandnephews and that were like. Yeah. They says, 3 lads and went with the 11 girls. They began to look round and looked all over the steerage area. I wondered, they were, second or third day, they were in a huge storage area. And they're looking at everything in the storage area. What's this burn? What's that burn? And all that. And they came down to the bottom corner of the storage area. And there was, as we were told, a ladder going up. But we know it wasn't a ladder. It was a magnificent stairway. But the person who told the story, one of the survivors, Annie Kate Kelly, she had never seen the stairs in her life before that. She'd only seen ladders. Yeah. So she just said there was a ladder going up. So they went up the ladder, magnificent stairway. And when they got up, they saw the rest of the ship and went all over the ship. Came down and brought up a few of the girls up and a few others. And things. Then a few nights later, there was one girl, Nora Fleming, she was one of the girls from just back the road here. She was celebrating her 24th birthday when they heard the toilet cord and they heard all the excitement and all that. And they weren't allowed out. But the 3 lads knew the way up the stairway and brought a lot of the local girls here with them, and a lot of others as well, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of others. They brought them all up the back way, up through the storage area, and that's how anyone from steerage area was saved.
Yeah, I think the film about the Titanic, that was in it, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah, it was about them finding their way out.
Finding their way out.
It was definitely made in the, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, they made a film about it.
Yes.
And
yes.
They had that in it. Yeah,
so. You did good research for that.
Yeah, you'll have a look, will you?
Yeah. So, an awful lot of the stories, that's the things we know.
Yeah.
Like those little things.
Yeah.
About the lads finding the stairway up and all came from one of the 3 survivors.
Yeah.
Annie Kate Kelly. She was just up the road here a little bit. And Annie Kate, just by chance, she was saved.
Yeah.
Because there were 2 other people chosen to go on lifeboat number 14 first, who declined.
Yeah.
And then there was space for her and she got on. And she kept a wonderful record of everything.
Yeah.
Every little thing that happened with the Lapland people on the Titanic and the lifeboats and everything. She recorded everything. Now, she became a nun in New York, Sister Patrick Joseph, and later a teacher out in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And an awful lot of her stories or things she told were included in the film, the Titanic film.
Yeah.
And that would have been about the lads finding the stairway and that. Yeah. Now, she was the only one who ever came back.
Mm-hmm.
She came back for a week in the 70s.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move along a little bit.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
We come from the Midlands in England. We're Shropshire.
Uh-huh.
But I was born in Northern Ireland, or Derry.
Oh, okay.
So I'm from the north. Angela's English. So.
Yeah, I'm English, although I've got Irish heritage.
Grandmother was from Cork, so
sort of Cahill,
mixed, really.
So I wonder what to read about that name, Cahill.
We call it the Cailleach.
The what?
Cailleach. Because Cailleach is the Irish word for the old woman.
Yeah.
So the old woman, the granny usually slept in here.
Okay.
It always had a wooden top on it. Yeah. That's what our stones are. The region would have been made of wood. And she would have slept in there.
Yeah.
Quite close to the fire, so she'd be nice and warm all the time.
Yeah.
Now, behind the fire in all the old houses was what they called the room above. Yeah. Now, the room above had certain significances as well.
Yeah.
It was where Mammy and Daddy slept.
Okay.
But it was also the visitor's room if anyone should come.
It was warmer, was it?
Yes. Or if they were having a special meal or anything, it was used as a dining room area.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was the room above. Now the room above always had a little opening over the doorway, which was nice and handy for Mam and Dad to keep a good eye on everything.
Okay, yeah.
Now the great thing about this house is that is the original door.
Oh, okay.
It was a good visiting house.
Yeah.
So quite a number of the people who were on the Titanic would actually have been in this house.
Okay.
I would actually have gone in and out that doorway. Okay. Now another grand significance about the fireplace is those two little things here. They usually didn't find those. Yeah. Little openings beside the fire, where if the turf wasn't fully dry and all that, there'd be a few sods put in here and a few sods on that side. And when they were needed, they were good and dry to put on the fire.
Yeah.
Now, most of the old cottages had the one big main room. Mm. So there was the room above for Mammy and Daddy, place here for the kayak, and the main room here, which was kitchen, living room, work room. It was everything. It was had a door front and back with a half door on it, and a window each side.
Yeah.
And then the dresser would be here, where the delf were kept. And then in last the old house then, down at the end down here, would have been three cows' mangers, where in the cold winter months, maybe December, January, or that, if there was frost or snow, the cows might be brought in at night time. Because milk was such a terribly important thing in their diet.
Yeah.
It was the main staple part of their diet. Milk and potatoes was the staple diet. So it was very, very important that the cows be looked after. So in the very, very cold winter's nights, the cows were brought in the three stables, or the three stables down here. Now over the cow stables, there was a little garret or a loft with a partition down the centre of it. And a ladder going up one side, a ladder going up the other side. And the boys slept up here and the girls slept up here.
No mix of
Mammy and Daddy could keep a good eye on everything out from the window, and Granny could supervise everything. Now, of course, it had just an ordinary earthen floor.
Yeah, yeah.
So on the day we opened the park, the official opening, we put all the documents and all the information we had put in writing, it was put down there, which will be taken up again in 2037, after 25 years.
Who's going to do that then? You don't know?
I won't be around anyway.
This is all the records.
And you can put a glass plate on it. You put lots of effort and thought in that. Well done.
Again, I was up the two walls, the two end walls, this one, all from stones from around the homes.
Yeah.
Now, here we've got the 14 people.
Yeah.
And we see the little town of Carrigskeen, the quarter of the little bush.
Yeah.
Just back here, quarter of a mile back here.
Yeah.
And five people from that little town, and three houses side by side.
Yeah.
John Burke, his wife Catherine, his sister Mary.
Yeah.
Then there was Nora Fleming, the girl who was celebrating her 24th birthday, like the ship sank. Mary Mangan, who features quite a lot in things, even though she didn't show up nothing much about her or anything.
Yeah.
She went down with the Titanic. But how she features is her body resurfaced at a later stage. Mm. But when it resurfaced, it was completely decomposed, completely unrecognizable. But she was identified by a watch she was wearing a gold chain around her neck with her name inscribed in it, Mary Mangan. And thankfully that watch has come back to the area.
Is it?
Okay. Yes, her grandnephews have it.
Yeah.
And there was James Flynn, the owner of that house there. And Bridget Dunhoe, Pat Canavan, oh, the man who would have led the fellas about in the steerage. And Catherine McGowan, Mary Canavan. Now, Catherine McGowan, she was the woman who had been in Chicago, who came back quite well off. She was much older than the others.
Yeah.
And she was the one who probably financed a lot of the others.
Yeah.
Now, down here was her niece.
Yeah.
She was the youngest of that. She was only 14 years of age. So they were the three who were saved.
Yeah.
Now, Annie Kate Kelly came back. That says she came back for a week when she was in her 70s.
Yeah. The nun then, was she?
Yes, she was the nun. The other two girls didn't come back.
Mm.
Or their families didn't come back. But their grandchildren came back.
Yeah.
And their grandchildren were here for the opening of the park.
Okay. Oh, were they? Yeah,
and they decided they would make a donation.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And the donation they made was, they donated a stained glass window in the church commemorating the departure of the Titanic, or the loss. And in the stained glass window, which was done by a local artist, when I say a local artist, an American, but he lives locally.
Yeah.
Actually lives next door near to where those people were.
Mm-hmm.
And he did such a wonderful job on the stained glass window. It shows Annie Kate Kelly standing up in lifeboat number 16, waving up to the other people still on the Titanic. But he did such a wonderful job that we can identify some of the people in the window up on the Titanic. We can, Pat Canavan, there's an old photograph from we'll see it down here. Hey, is identified immediately from the old photograph.
Yeah.
The other person I can identify is Mary Mangan.
Mm.
You can see the woman with the big gold watch around her neck.
Yeah.
So now this thing here just shows the journey they took. Well, from Lahardown up to Castlebar by horse and trap, then by train down to Cove and County Cork, and off on the Titanic. How people got on the lifeboats were, some of the crew members said, hey, you run, you, come on, you can go on, you can go on. No, they picked out the women, just women, men.
No chance.
Men weren't allowed on. So, lifeboat number 16, Catherine Burke was chosen to go on lifeboat number 16. So was Mary Burke. But John wouldn't be allowed on. Now, Catherine was heavily pregnant.
Mm.
So she says, well, if John isn't going, I won't go.
Mm.
I won't leave my husband. I will stay with my husband, stay and die with him.
Mm.
And then his sister, Mary, says, well, if John and Catherine aren't going, I won't go. I will get off as well and stay with them. Now, when they declined, when they got off the lifeboat, the next person who was called, there was a bit of room left, and Annie Kate Kelly got on.
Yeah.
Now, had that not happened, if Annie Kate hadn't got on, we wouldn't know any of the stories.
Mm.
All the stories you know.
Yeah.
So much there was even in the film.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have known if Annie Kate hadn't got on. So now, that shows the route they took. It just shows that.
Yeah.
Now, 110 Irish people were lost.
Mm.
Out of the 110, exactly 10% of them, 11, from that.
Yeah.
From just a small community, isn't it?
So
it's really
a huge loss for a small rural area like this. Yeah. It's just as about the survivors, Dealey McDermott, married John Lynch, a Galway man. Yeah. Didn't come back. And Kate Kelly, she began the teacher and a Dominican on. She was the one who came back. And Anna McGowan didn't come back. Yeah. But as I said, their grandchildren did.
Annie McGowan lived a good age, 95.
So now, this is the church bell above that we ring every year to commemoration. So now, this little building here then is a reconstruction of the gables of two houses. So the homes of two of them.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly whose two houses they were.
Yeah.
But the house were completely destructed. Yeah. The gables rebuilt.
Yeah. Okay. Weren't big, were they?
Huh?
Houses weren't big?
Yeah. No. So that's where the light is. Yeah. I don't see it. Must be gone. But it must be gone or something. Taken away. That's the thing that Mayor Robinson put up. Now, up here in the corner. Oh, don't know, simpler words.
Yeah,
get old.
Yeah.
Biggest garrison and really a town in Ireland was in Castlebar. So it was very, very important for him to capture Castlebar.
Oh, yeah.
But the march took the town of Ballinagh and that. It was marching towards Castlebar. But somebody told him, oh sure, the garrison, they're all out, the whole army is out there expecting you. You'll be wiped out in minutes.
Yeah.
You'd better go a different way. So they directed him cross country here, north shore of the lake. Yeah. Came here. The only person here who could speak French was the local priest, who was ordained actually in France. And he was able to said, well, there's one of the volunteers here, one of the rebels, who knows every inch of the way up the Windy Gap, the back road into Castlebar, and he'll be able to guide you up that way. So he did, and they got into Castlebar. And just the night before they were to it, the garrison, of course, were expecting them. They were all out prepared, the most experienced troops at the front, less experienced behind them, and the least experienced at the back, you know. But Captain Mangan, the person who led the French up, on the night before they were ready to attack, he moved from one hill to another. And the early hours of the morning he attacked.
Yeah.
But he attacked not where the garrison was faced to the front, but from the rear. And the fellas at the back who were inexperienced panicked and ran. And the fellas in front of them ran, and the whole garrison eventually ran. And to this day, that is known as the Races of Castlebar. But anyway, after Humbert was defeated in the Battle of Ballinawook, he made a treaty with the English authorities in Ballinamook, and the treaty was, or the agreement was, that all the French troops would be given safe passage back to France, but every Irish person who helped in any way, even the slightest way, all the details would be given. And one of the details I got was about how Father Conroy nominated this fellow to direct them into Castlebar. And for that, Father Conroy was charged with 7 counts of treason. So he was arrested, brought to Castlebar. And he was charged, tried, convicted, and sentenced, all in the space of 40 minutes. So that monument there was erected to his memory. And I remember one day, years ago, was a group of young people from Antrim and Down, were down here. And I was asked to meet them and give them a little talk. I was there and I talked to them and that. And we talked about the monument, about the 1798 rebellion, and about the United Irishmen and that. Now talk about the founding of the United Irishmen and the great founders there were. There was Hugh Munro, Robert Emmet, Henry Munro, Napper Tandy, Henry Joy McCracken, and a few more like that. And then men who would see them says, oh, it's just surprising to hear you mention, come down here and hear somebody mention Henry Joy McCracken. He says, I know the McCracken family well, he says. In fact, Henry Joy was the Methodist minister in such a place, and I am his successor.
Yeah.
And the man was so proud. Yeah. You know, delighted they come down, that somebody down here was remembered, that he thought wouldn't even be remembered down here.
Yeah.
So we got quite friend with him. Yeah. And later, he invited five of us, were invited up as guests one day in Stormont.
Oh, wow.
And we're given a big public greeting and dinner and tour of Stormont. That was just, they would say, for Nationalists or Republicans down here to brought up to Stormont. So we've been very, very, very honoured.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can't even remember the man's name now, though I've seen his name on numerous occasions since. Mm. Oh yeah, when we went up that night then, we were guests in an orange hall up in...
That was difficult for you.
...in Antrim, wasn't it? Well, we were given a big reception there.
Yeah.
Oh, and a big, big fuss made of it. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Some of the people, some of the girls who were there playing music in the orange hall had been part of the group who were down here.
Yeah.
But they made us so comfortable.
Well, that's good, isn't it? You know, from across the Irish divide, that people were coming
together. We kind of thought, I kind of thought, that we're up to a very, very, very strong unionist area.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they'd be kind of very anti-Mayo people.
Oh, yes,
you know. But it was the direct opposition.
Yeah.
So
you get
a bit
of
good
Irish history. We go to the church over here.
We can go up to the church.
Dort sind wir vor der Kirche und dort gibt es ein Buntglasfenster. Und Thomas Gibbons gibt uns hier noch eine Führung. Also diese Stiftung finanziert sich über Spenden und bietet deswegen auch Führungen an.
So this where we reassemble then, we'd say, in the morning of the 14th. And the candlelight procession going right round the church there. I was up to the church bell here. So we have the bell ringing ceremony.
Oh,
okay. And usually we have a platform there, you know.
Yeah.
And the 14 things that are left out in the shape of the brow of the ship. Now we're just going to have a look at the saying that's where it is.
So, jetzt gehen wir in die Kirche rein. Thank you.
Mightn't be able to see. We'll leave the door open.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's sounded out, there's no light. Now, this is the stained glass window, which was an indicate here on lifeboat number 16.
Yeah.
And all the people still on the Titanic. Now, you see the little fella with the cap and the handle?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. No, the photograph I showed you below.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly as he is. Now see the woman, Mary Mangan, with the gold watch around her cheek. And Annie Kate, she told in her story about she looked up and saw Pat Calvin with his rosary beads in his hand. And see the rosary beads up there. And then we sit and see the final flare going up from the Titanic.
It's beautifully made.
So he lives locally now, the man who did that. No, this was the first thing that was done, actually.
Yeah.
Was the erection of the plaque here.
Yeah, yeah.
That was down before the windows of the park. And it was unveiled was at the end of Mass one Sunday. But during Mass, when the gifts were brought up, when the gifts brought up to the altar, was Mary Mangan's watch.
Okay. Mm.
And it was brought up by Anthony Mangan, her nephew.
Not from America?
He lived locally here.
But he was American. You know.
Yeah. Now, that the plaque is here in that particular spot on the wall. And that's the reason why it's exactly there. People have asked me, why isn't it up at the altar and at the doorway or something? But back in 1912, they didn't have seats in the church here or anything.
Okay.
No churches had seats much. People came in just maybe knelt on the floor or whatever it was. But the baptismal font was just there.
Mm.
So all 14 people would have been baptized just there.
Ah, okay.
And that's where they were baptized. Mm. So that's why the plaque is there.
Okay.
Mm. Now the granddaughters of the two girls who survived would I ask the second window, and this was the window they donated, which was Nathan in the background, Nathan Mountain.
Yeah,
the Holy Spirit,
well.
Covered, the people leaving home, the four in each trap, of course, three women and one man, and see the woman with the hat.
Yeah.
And the little cottages, all the little cottages in the background.
Mm.
And here the church, more or less, as it would have been in 1912.
Yeah. Mm. So that's them leaving.
And of course, the Holy Spirit coming down on them to guide them on their way.
Yeah. Mm. It's beautiful.
A few other little things I'd show you now, just by here.
Yeah.
You've heard of Harry Clark windows.
Harry?
Harry Clark windows.
Tell me, I'm probably from. I should know. Yeah.
Well, Harry Clark windows are the most famous stained glass windows in the world.
Oh, right, okay.
There's a few in America and different parts of the world, but they're very, very famous. And here is the Harry Clark window. Now, it wasn't originally made for this church or anything, but was in another church, which is down near Ballycastle. It was an old church. Now, I don't know how they got a Harry Clark window. Because Harry Clark windows, they were worth millions and millions. But the priest who was here had been the curate in a place down there at one stage and knew that the windows were taken out or there was a new church built or something. And the windows were all stored in a shed. And he knew there was a Harry Clark window in it. So he got the Harry Clark window, brought to the church here. Now, they were renovating the church here at the time and built the other windows and made the other windows same shape as this one to suit this one.
So is that window...
So that was an original Harry Clark window.
Is that optical illusion or is it actually the middle sticking out? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's...
Can I go over it?
Well, you can, of course. Is that the
optical
illusion.
Is this optical illusion? That's flat.
Oh, it is flat.
It's flat, Angela. But you stand there, to my eyes, it looks like, isn't it?
Yeah, you have that a bit, because of the darker colour. Mm. And you have the bright colours in the middle.
You see what I mean? It looks like it was protruding, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then about 14 or 15 years ago, there was a visitor here one day and I was talking to him. And he said, well, there is a window of the Virgin Mary, but this is not St. Mary's Church. This is St. Patrick's Church. He said, there really should be a St. Patrick's window. Now, he was head of the Harry Clark Foundation. I know it's in America or in England or where. But he commissioned another window, which was donated free to the church here.
That
That's neat.
Now, Sarah, and that one there, now, if we just look at the corner, we can see the Harry Clark name, yeah. Harry mm-hmm. Clark and the gear. And see this one? You can stand back now, I can see. The two are identical.
Yeah, they are.
All the features the same, wow. But here's the St. Patrick's one.
Yeah.
Mm. You'd really want to know the whole history of St. Patrick to interpret all the stories yeah. that are told in that regard. It's unbelievable yeah. all the stories are yeah. told. For instance, we can see here in Lord down here, the snake's been driven from Ireland.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Thomas. Und auch dir danke, schön, dass du mit dabei warst, mit uns auf der Grünen Insel. Wenn du mal live mit dabei sein willst, dann kannst du das natürlich gerne sein. Im Herbst, im Oktober, ab 8. Oktober veranstalten wir eine Fotoakademie in Sligo. Da kannst du gerne mal mit uns kommen. Unsere Idee, unser Konzept ist, nicht nur zu fotografieren, nach dem Motto Be the Dundead, sondern auch die Umgebung und die Menschen kennenzulernen und natürlich tolle Fotos machen. Wenn dich das interessiert, wenn dich das anspricht, dann schau doch einfach mal auf unserer Website vorbei, fotoerlebnis.eu, und komm mit uns im Herbst. Ansonsten hoffen wir, dass dir die Episode gefallen hat. Lass uns einfach ein Like oder einen Kommentar da. Und ich wünsche dir einen ganz tollen Tag. Dein Chris, bis bald.